Everyone, this is John.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the official show for the month of February 2021. And we're probably going to forego a lot of news and jump straight into games after a couple of little quick hits, because we talked about most of the news already with the Nintendo Direct as well as the financial report. I think those are the two big things. But there were a couple of games.
Riveting financial report.
Yeah, Nintendo made a fuck ton of money.
Yeah. We contributed.
We sure did. So, there were a couple of game announcements that I think were at least worth spending a couple of seconds on. There's the Blizzard Arcade Collection, which is available now on Switch. There's like Lost Vikings and a couple other like classic Blizzard games.
Oh, yeah. That news escaped me.
That's cool. Yeah. And then also the Diablo 2 remaster.
That did not escape me. Man, I am so excited.
I saw the little gifts that you sent.
I literally had no idea it was even a possibility to come to the Switch. I wasn't even thinking from the perspective that maybe they would put it on consoles. I was like, it's going to be a PC game, right? Of course it'll be on the PC. So what do I care about anything? You know, I'll be happy. Just give me. And then, yeah, fuck, it's going to be on the Switch? Are you kidding me? That's so cool.
I mean, you're still getting it for PC.
I'm getting it. They said that it's cross...
platform.
Yeah, you can't play PC with someone on Switch, but you can your accounts carry over.
Oh, interesting.
Oh.
Or, I mean, I that's what it sounded like they were saying. They didn't say it's cross-play. They said it was cross...
Save
or something.
Cross-progression? Something.
I think maybe that was the term they used. They had a very specific word.
So if you want to buy the game twice...
I mean,
you totally can.
In my life, I know that I bought base Diablo when Diablo 2 when it came out. I bought the Lord of Destruction expansion pack, and I bought the Battle Chest, I think twice in my lifetime.
Is the Battle Chest like a collection of like the game and the expansions?
It's only $29.99, but yeah, it comes with the first Diablo, Hellfire, Diablo 2, and Lord of Destruction comes with all of them, but it just gives you the disc. But now you could just go straight onto Blizzard's Battle.net and buy the game there digitally if you wanted, and you should, because it's a fucking amazing game. Or you can wait a couple of months and get it on the Switch.
Yeah, so it is out this year, 2021. It is specifically a remaster, not a remake.
Yes.
Which they made special emphasis to point out, like, we're not remaking the game, we're just giving you...
As I understand, you can even convert it back to its original graphical integrity, if you feel so inclined. If you want to play it with the old look, you can.
It's kind of cool. I like when games do that.
Yeah. I can't tell you how excited I am to play this game. Like, again, for another 1,000 hours of my life or whatever. Like, I've played so much Diablo 2 and it never gets old. I swear to God, it is so much fun.
And then the other piece of news. It's not really news yet. There is a Pokemon presentation tomorrow morning.
Oh, shit.
At 7 a.m. Pacific, which puts it at like 10 a.m. Eastern Time, which is where we live.
Good deal.
In the Eastern Time Zone.
And don't tell them that.
They know we live in Orlando. I've given your home address many times.
You didn't tell them we're in Castleberry.
there's the Pokemon video presentation tomorrow morning. I think most people are rightfully expecting a Diamond Pearl, some sort of a remake.
Especially after that tweet.
Where they're like, let's go Sinnoh and like show the three starters. Like, well, I think it kind of...
Yeah.
Which out of those three starters, which one do you choose?
Chimchar.
God.
Piplup? Obviously.
It's Piplup.
Yeah.
Piplup's the correct answer.
Well, I think
you want
like...
steel water? I mean,
yeah, it's a water seal. I mean, goddamn.
You can pick whichever one you want. I picked the fire starter just because of the sheer scarcity of fire types within that game. There's Chimchar.
I feel like there's always a scarcity of fire types in these games.
I suppose. I mean, it's not a super common type, but...
In that one, there's Chimchar in like a Ponyta, right?
Yep. That's it. That's all you got. There are no other fire types. They're in like... Before you get to the E4. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the remake.
It's almost like Gen 4 is a low point in Pokemon.
Which is why, like...
Sorry.
It's so ripe for a remake, and we don't really know what sort of remake this is going to be. I'm hoping for a Gen 8 Sword Shield style remake. It's entirely possible they do a Let's Go style game.
They're not doing a Gen 8 style remake of it.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. I feel like that's too much work.
Why would they go?
Why would it be more work?
Yeah, they do already have the engine. I don't know. I'm speaking out of my ass. Don't.
I mean, you could
be spewing nonsense.
You could be entirely right.
I think they're just gonna clean it up and do a visual remake as a main thing, like they typically do.
I think it's important to like realize that this is a company that needs to make a game every year. Hmm. Like their shareholders expect this of them. They expect them to make a game every year. It's part and parcel of this.
Sometimes multiple.
Not every game is going to be like a, we'll take 3 more years before we release this Metroid game just to make sure it's good, or we'll just delete this game and just delete the entire contents of the folder.
And I mean, I think it's just going to look like a prettier version of what it is.
I think it would be weird that they would have made the Let's Go model and then not use it again for something else. Because they would have just basically crafted it. It's not
Let's Go. I mean, come on.
I mean, again, I think
at least... Make it look like Let's Go, but still, make it like...
I think the least invested in this were, I'm like totally okay with it being in the Let's Go format. If that is what they announce tomorrow, we don't even know. This could be a wasted conversation if they don't say that. And we don't even have a fucking Pokemon show.
No, yeah, we do. So
we're burning content. Shit.
Well, by the time we record the Pokemon show, we will know what this was. I mean, maybe this is all a big troll, and they didn't announce a Gen 4 remake of any kind.
Somebody the announcement is they're done with Pokemon.
Somebody on the Pokemon Reddit did say that, where they were like, here's 3 or 4 tweets of them totally trolling us. They're like, no, they've done this in the past. They've fucked with us before. They would not be above this.
Maybe they're going to skip right to a Gen 5 remake, which would be the best possible thing they could do. But to your point, Wes, I'm not so sure why it would be more work one way or the other. Either way, they're going to have to rebuild the game in the Let's Go style or in the Sword Shield style. They're not going to like build the middleware they would need to get an up-res DS game working on Switch. That would be more work.
I think that's a good point. I don't know. I'm speaking nonsense. You know me. I'm always the one saying stupid shit on there.
But watch. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, like, watch it just be a...
There's like 2 like tiny DS screens on the Switch. They're like divided up by some black space, and it still runs like where the tiny HP depletes so slowly.
This is how they do it. This is how they do it. There's a wire you have to buy to connect your Switch to the dock. Oh, and your Switch screen is going to be the bottom screen, and your TV is going to be the top screen.
That would be exactly the sort of thing they do.
I was going to say, what if they just found like that they actually had a stock of a few hundred thousand of those old Nooks? Like the actual tablets. And they're like, all you have to do is spend an extra $60 to buy this tablet and plug it in directly.
I think that's more expensive than the Nook was.
Oh, man. First up, not a new release, but a game you are playing. I want to hear about Paradise Killer. That one came back.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Came out back in September, so it's not ancient by any means.
Right. Yeah. So it is a detective game of sorts, I guess you could say. Generally, the first thing that anyone says about it, if you look up a review or any kind of conversation, is that it's a vaporwave game or that it's got this vaporwave aesthetic. Do you guys know what that is? Or
no.
Are you guys familiar with it?
Yeah, I got no idea.
Vaporwave, think about like, I'm trying to think of a good comparison, it would be like steampunk. You know how steampunk is sort of like what the early 1900s industrialization, but from the future, would look like? Or like, that game you've been playing, Bioshock.
Okay.
Like kind of what the 50s thought the future might be like, too. Vaporwave is this sort of bizarre aesthetic that feels like it's very nostalgic of the 80s, but sort of what 80s futurism felt like. This is very weird to describe. It's just a graphic style. I mean, of all the things that
like
you can
like a Back to the Future 2 kind of thing.
Maybe. I think that not really that. Like a good example would be GTA Vice City. Think about Vice City, how it uses a lot of like neon blue and pink, and there's palm trees everywhere, and it's got the 80s music. It just feels very much like that. I don't know if you guys know your Final Fight stages all that well, but the Bay City, when you're walking along Bay City and it's got that music playing.
Is that the beach?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you've got the, off in the distance, you see the skyline. The game Echo the Dolphin that came out on Sega CD is like the vaporwaviest shit. I mean, it's an aesthetic that, it's just like film noir. It's an aesthetic that once you see it in action, you're like, holy shit, that's vaporwave. It's like Windows 95.
Okay, I see it.
You know, it's palm trees and pyramids. And you know, Roman sculptures and very bright colors. Like those kind of infinity grids where it's like a line in the distance with a bunch of grids on it. I mean, it's very... Like the film Drive. The film Drive has a bit of a vaporwave aesthetic.
Okay.
So a deep cut. Yeah. I know. I'm trying to think of all these different ways that you could describe what this looks like. But this game is just absolutely drenched in it in terms of an aesthetic. And I think to its benefit, I've never seen a game so like confidently command this weird style. And... It is a detective game, right? So that's kind of what you do. And it's not a detective game in the sense of other detective games I've played where it's a lot of like menus and shit and like talking through dialogue trees to unlock stuff. There is tons of dialogue in this game through trees that you have to talk to people with. But it's not so much centered around that heavily. And it's not so much about you like ever interrogating somebody like on a witness stand. It's not like a detective show or like, because that's what I remember from like the Phoenix Wright games, is that you would get a guy in the stand and then you would have to start poking holes in their arguments. That doesn't really happen. When it actually comes time to have a trial for all of the crimes that have been laid before you, you know all of this. You have all of, I mean, if you've done your research, if you've looked through it, you've figured everything out already. So you're just sort of laying the facts out. What you want to lay out of the facts too. The game lets you, in a great way, it lets you withhold some of that stuff. I think I'm getting ahead of myself. The premise of the game is, if you're actually wondering, like, what is the crime? Like, what is going on here? It's a very bizarre concept you have to wrap your head around, because it's sort of like there's a handful of gods that exist. And they are kind of crafting this world, this small island that is supposed to be like paradise. Like, I get the paradise color, right? So it's supposed to be paradise. And then you have a lot of what they call citizens that live in there. So there's this sort of class system, right? You have the gods that run the whole place that are called the syndicate. You can think of them like Greek gods. And then you have, you know, the plebs. You have the people that live on there, live on this island. And they call it Sequence 24, right? And the sequence is called Sequence 24 because every once in a while they build a new island to kind of achieve perfection, to move closer to what they believe perfection should be for the gods themselves and for all of the people that live there.
What happens to the previous islands? Do they get destroyed or are they still around?
Yeah, it all gets destroyed.
Okay, so they're on their 24th attempt. Yes. At least their 24th attempt.
Right.
It has been 24 times since they decided to start numbering.
And to the tune of probably about 13,000 years.
Okay.
They've been at this. And so you're picking up in the game as they're transitioning from this island 24 to sequence 25. And they've already started moving people over. And then what happens is this group that sort of manages everything, think of them as like the highest gods of the gods that control everything, end up all getting murdered. There's like a mass murder that occurs. And they have pinned it on... Well, they may not pinned it. There is a guy that it looks like he very, very well may have done it. All of the evidence points to him being the one that's done it. And then that's when your character, you play this lady, her name's Lady Love, dies. You kind of
okay.
The names of these characters are fucking amazing. There's Witness to the End. There's Lydia and Max Daybreak. They're a couple. Crimson Acid, Dr. Doom Jazz. The names of them are so great. One, there's a character who dies and comes back in some sort of corporeal form, and her name is One Last Kiss. You know, you gotta love that. This game has got so much fucking style.
What is Dr. Doom Jazz? What is he a doctor of?
He actually is, believe it or not. He's sort of the doctor of the community. He performed the autopsies.
Oh, like an ND or a medical examiner?
Yeah, he's legitimately a medical doctor. He prescribes drugs to the people there. It's a thing. Right. It's a thing that happens. Yeah, no, and that's a good...
How he introduces himself? Dr. Doom Jazz, MD.
Right, like, so there's Carmelina, right? And she is the architect. She's an architect of the new islands. You have... character like Lydia Daybreak is the taxi cab driver of the community, essentially. She drives you around.
They only have the one?
Yeah, just the one. Max is the bartender. You know, everyone's kind of got a role on the island. And Witness to the End, it's his job to kind of dismantle everything. He's the one that's supposed to make sure that, you know, when this sequence is done, it's all destroyed and everything's been moved to the new island. Right? So, again, I'm kind of going all over the place here with this. So basically, what that means is you have kind of the smaller cast of characters, of people that are involved. And what makes this different than a lot of the other detective games is that it's actually kind of an open world first person game that you explore in. It's not so much that you talk to somebody and then a new dialogue option opens up somewhere else and you talk to them and that tree and all that. You very much have the island itself to explore. You go look at the crime scenes, you unlock hidden areas, you go all over and pick up information. And you could literally just spend your time wandering on the island, which, by the way, you should. The island is fucking crazy. It looks so cool when you actually are in it and exploring it. The game gives you a lot of navigational stuff to help you around, like you have a faster run walk, you've got a double jump. The game is also very, it's as big as the island is, it's also very vertical. So you are expected to actually platform and kind of get up into high places and do things like that. And thankfully, the game's very good about that. The game's big, your character's very sticky. So, like, if there's a ledge, the game kind of gives you a little give. You're not going to fall right off the edge. You know, you can kind of, like, hang on to it. So, it just makes the game really, really fun to just go around and dig into, kind of figure out everyone's motives and intentions. And again, it's not just that you're solving this one crime of a bunch of people getting murdered. It, as you uncover more information, it kind of becomes this big conspiracy. And you have to figure out who in this world is involved with it and what capacity. And then when you're ready, when you think you're ready, you lay it out in front. You basically go to the judge and say, I'm ready to hold the trial. Which, by the way, the second the game starts, you can just go to the judge and hold the trial right then if you feel so inclined. You won't have any information to back up anything you said. So I don't think that would go well.
Like, he did it. Come on. Look at that guy.
And I don't think I'm burying the lead here. I don't think I'm giving away anything by saying that the guy, Henry, that is believed to have been the killer of all of this, is really not the bad guy. There's a lot of people above him engaging in a conspiracy to kill these people that run the syndicate. And he's just sort of the fall guy. So...
Yeah, it'd be kind of a boring premise if
it was just
if the game started like, oh yeah, it was definitely him. Go figure it out so you can really pile on in court.
Oh, yeah. it was him.
Imagine like the letdown? Like if like you go through this game and you're playing, but like how long do you think you spent on the game?
Honestly, I'm not kidding. I probably did like 95% completion of going through everything, getting all the evidence and everything. It took me about 10 hours maybe, and then so another two hours to do the trial.
So you play through the game in 12 hours and just the
just
end
one is... case? It boils down to 8 different things that would be established as crimes that you have to say somebody in the room did it or say that you can't prove. You have to say somebody did it, and generally it means you have to say that Henry did it. And again, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. You may find yourself not at all wanting to kill this guy. You may think, yeah, he's clearly being taken advantage of. He's just another civilian. He could have been murdered anyways.
You get to choose his sentence as the prosecutor.
So I think
this guy's innocent, but you should kill him anyways.
I think that's a really interesting point this game wants to make, is that you define the truth. Like, we always think that truth is the objective thing, and it's like, no, really not at all. You're the one that gets to go to court. And again, some of these people, you struggle to really, you can see why they did what they did. And like you're saying, they've been trying 24 times and 25 times and they can't make this place perfect. They can't make it perfect because not everybody is going to be happy. That's the big problem. It's like you have people there who are being denied love, who are being told that they can't fall in love with who they want to fall in love with. You have ones that are being told that because of their bloodline, they're not allowed to be certain things. You yourself have been exiled. I didn't even mention that part. You've been exiled for like the past 15 sequences because of something you did with a lover.
How old is your character?
She's been in prison for, they say, 8,000 years.
Oh, okay. So all these people are like...
All the others put her in prison. Yeah, yeah.
So everybody.
Oh, you are the detective. You're the inquisitor, by the way. You're the one that's supposed to go around and have everyone's dirt. But like Crimson Acid, who is another woman in the game. Her job is that she loves collecting people's dirty laundry. She likes getting into everyone's business. So of course she has all of this information that would implicate her in virtually every crime. But you also find out if you do it right, you're gonna fuck her. But then you're also going to realize that this is like your best friend, that she's probably the nicest person on the island. And at any point you could accuse her of any crime. There are some very, very bad people on the island. But every single one of them has a reason to see that sequence 25 is not going to be perfect for anybody. There is no perfect sequence. And then it's on you. Oh, and there is no in-between. It's not like anybody gets sentenced to 1,000 years of isolation like you were sentenced to. You literally have a... Well, you don't shoot it or hold it in your hand or ever or anything, but they give you a gun. And if you get someone accurately sentenced to death, you shoot them. Or, I mean, even if you don't... Even if
oh
you
my
just
God.
Accuse them...
What sort of justice system is this?
It's ridiculous. And then you know what else you can do? You can let somebody go. You could say, like, okay, this guy Yuri did it. I know he's a bad guy. But then when it comes time to point the finger and say who did it, you could say it wasn't him. And then let him go. And then before you leave, go over to him and then shoot him. Like, once it goes over, the game lets you just kill off. If there's somebody that you really wanted to kill, you were like, well, fuck everything about this person, but I can't exactly accuse them of anything, the game still lets you have the justice of shooting them. But then the game also... Again, there's no in-between. It's death. It's either innocence or death. There is no gray area where you get to say, oh, well, you did kind of a bad thing. And you may find yourself murdering people that you feel deeply sympathetic for. People you think should not have met that fate. But they broke the law and did something that got many people killed when they shouldn't have. And they should have known that they were doing something wrong. So again, it's this big thing. You know, it's like in the Phoenix Wright game never made me feel any way about a thing.
Yeah, you just walk around with a gun that shoots people in the face. I mean.
Yeah, you know, like in a Phoenix Wright game, you're basically just like, you know the bad guy's bad. And you're like, oh, I'm going to get you, you bad, bad guy.
Yeah, it is. and it's, well, I mean, I was about to say it's never anything as serious as murder, but oftentimes it is as serious as murder. But there's no... gravity to sort of like the moral decisions that you're making in a Phoenix Wright game. You're in a court case and your job is like, hey, that guy's the killer and here's the evidence to prove it. And then he'll go to jail. You're not dealing with... They don't treat the game with the sort of gravity that you would normally see from like a courtroom drama movie or anything like that. You're not dealing with any of the sort of real consequences. It's cartoon.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that was what would always happen in Matlock. It's like, Matlock would, like, 5 people would die.
Mm.
And then Matlock would just stumble across the scene like a, you know, drunken homeless person and just poke around and figure things out, right? Yeah. Matlock is a show from the 80s as well. It's not a vaporwave thing, but it's an 80s Shit.
Oh, or like fucking Columbo. What are these other 80s detective shows?
Yeah.
And Columbo was a fucking show that... he was just like deliberately playing like this buffoon. Like he would like show up people's houses and like ring the doorbell and like act like he had, like he'd trip over his own shoelaces and shit. And so like give him access. Like who is this guy? He's not gonna be able to figure it out. He's so fucking stupid. And by playing the fool, he then just like gets everyone to spill their secrets to him.
Yeah.
What the fuck are we talking about?
I don't know. This is not really a traditional detective game, I think is the point. And again, yeah, it's this first person perspective where you actually do go around, navigate. Run all over the place. You find hidden stuff. In case I'm not making it, if I haven't made it clear yet, this game is fucking amazing. I think this game is really, really good. We've already talked about I have no middle ground. I'm either a 11 out of 10 or a 1.
Right.
But this game is $15. It's a cheap game. Like, I watched the credits roll, and it was the same 5 names over and over and over again.
Hmm.
This is not a big team. This is not a huge project. And I saved this for last. Probably the single best thing about this game is the soundtrack. I have not played a game with such a good soundtrack in a long, long time. It's made by this guy, Epoch. And true to the Vaporwave aesthetic... By the way, Vaporwave started as a music, like a music genre. That was basically about twisting the old sounds of Muzak, in a way. So what you get with this is you get all over the place. It's a really good production where you get disco, electrofunk, this sound called New Jack Swing. I don't know if you guys really listen to that. But lots of ambient soundscapes. It all feels so very 80s when you throw it all together. It just pitch perfect nails this vaporwave aesthetic that the game wants. And it's not like it's little jingles. These aren't just jingles or, you know, levels to a video game in that kind of sense of music. These are like 3 to 5 minute long actual songs that are made. So again, it feels more like a GTA Vice City when you're got a music station you like, and then the sun starts to set on the shoreline, you know, and the colors start to change. It all feels so vaporwave.
Mm.
And this game nails it, due in part to the soundtrack, which is just fucking amazing. I even want to bring this up. Like, when I would boot up the game, there's this intro song that plays. It's called Welcome, and it's 2 minutes long. And I just grew to love the song so much that I would just sit there and listen to it and really just fucking dug into it and loved it. And about a minute into it, there's this little melodic riff that occurs, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty. That's nice. And not thinking anything of it, or like, why is that even there? It feels a little out of place. And then, like, the main song that you're going to hear over and over again, it's called Paradise Stay Forever. And once you actually, and you hear it all the time, it's an instrumental track, right? But you'll hear it all the time throughout the game. It's the very first song you get. You actually find the songs on the island and then have a little jukebox that you can play them in as you play the game. But at any rate, so you'll get that song. You'll hear it a lot since it's sort of like the big song that they're proud of. It's the best song on the soundtrack, in my opinion. But then once you actually solve the case, you go in and you just lay out the terms as you see them and everything's done and it's this really cathartic moment. They play that song again, but with the vocal track over it. And the vocal track uses that riff that you hear at the beginning of the game. Like, what a clever little touch on the soundtrack to give you this really nice little jingle of a hook right in the middle of their intro before you even start the game. Only there for you if you want to sit there and look at a press start screen for 2 minutes. That they give you that little riff and then bring it back with the actual lyrics in the closing finale of the game. Just a fucking sweet touch. Paradise Stay Forever is a great track. Lady Blue, Headlights on the Shore, Lemington Bop, Ego 24/7, and my favorite track is my second favorite track after the title one is Sarcophagus. Totally recommend this soundtrack. The music really fits the vibe of the game. Obviously, I'll end it there and say that this is a great game. It's well worth $15. If you like detective games, absolutely get them. No reason not to. If you just want a fun game that's not like a lot of the other games you probably play a lot, worth checking out too. That's it.
Cool. All right, so I got a new game. It's Blue Fire. This one came out back on the 4th. You really like Paradise Killer. Yeah, you highly recommend? Yes?
Yes, I think it's a very good game.
Blue Fire is fucking broken.
Oh, really?
This game is incomplete. Aside from the...
Speaking of broken, that's a chair.
Now this chair is broken, but that's okay. So there are constant crashes. Happens all the time throughout the game. Going into a new area, you just complete something. There are crashes in this game that have permanently locked me out of side quests. Or I have finished a side quest, got the reward from it, the game crashes... I reload the game, it's marking the side quest as finished. When I talk to the NPC, it's like, oh, thanks for helping me out with the thing, but the reward has disappeared.
That's shitty.
So great. Thankfully, that hasn't happened with any of the main objectives yet. I'm nearly done with the game, so fingers crossed, it'll get permanently locked out of something. There was a boss that was giving me a lot of trouble, and I did some side stuff, some upgrading and things, and I was able to beat the boss, and... It gave me like a little teleport module or teleport vortex. I was like, step into there and go to your next area. And I was like, first I'm going to save. So I did. Teleport to the next area, go through a little cutscene, and the game crashes. So like, well, glad I fucking saved. Thanks, game.
I was going to say, it was just like, you go through the portal and it just puts you back on the home menu.
That would be some genius trolley shit. So that's a thing that happens in this game. Also, in that same boss fight that I was mentioning, there's a little save mechanic. You have an economy of the amount of little potions that you can use that gets restored every time you get to a big save point. And they just become unusable at a certain point in that boss fight. The mechanic just plain doesn't work once you get to the boss's second phase. And then the same thing was happening in the next boss fight that I was going through. I died one time, came back, and then it was just all of a sudden working again. I could just all like use those healing items in the boss fight that wasn't working the first time around. It's sloppy, technically. There was a... For the longest time through the game, I clocked like 14 hours so far, and from the beginning of the game, whenever there's a load screen, it gives you like in Breath of the Wild style like little tips. This mechanic does this thing, and it would always tell me hold the attack button to do a spin attack. And I've seen this done in like trailers or videos for the game where your character like leaps in the air and does a little spin attack, Link style, except you get a little bit more altitude. And it's like, hold the attack button. Cool. Hold the attack button. Never does a goddamn thing. It plain doesn't work. And then once I got... it wasn't a mechanic that I ever really needed, but I always found it frustrating. Like, am I pressing the wrong button? I'm like checking the controls throughout the game. Like, that's the only attack button. That's the only button it could possibly be. Until I finally, yesterday, looked up like a blue fire spin attack. And it was a thing that... there's actually a side thing you have to go collect before it allows you to do it. Like, then why did you tell me I could do it from the start of the game? Like, why is this coming up as a tip at a point in the game where I have not been able to access that?
That's pretty shitty.
Yeah. I think they should have kept this one in the oven a while longer because there are a lot of these technical problems with it. And like I think if they had taken time to iron these things out, like the constant crashes and locking out of side quests and giving you the wrong advice at the wrong time, like this could have been more of like a Bloodstained situation where eventually eventually you uncover a good game underneath all these technical issues rather than like a Contra Rogue course situation where there's a shit game underneath a bunch of technical issues. I think that some of the platforming challenges they have are really good. Like, once you get far enough or you upgrade your character to, you know, you upgrade the height of your vertical leap and the length of your dash and the duration where you can wall run, there's a lot of cool platforming challenges that they present you with, and all doing all these upgrading like makes them easier to accomplish. There are like hidden areas. I think this game draws a lot of comparisons, or has drawn a few comparisons anyway, to Zelda and Hollow Knight. And I think Hollow Knight rightfully so, because it doesn't really like tell you that's the way you want to go. It just kind of like puts you into an environment and you kind of have to like follow your instinct as to where you're supposed to go next. And backtracking when you have more upgrades will allow you to uncover secrets and stuff you didn't know that was there, and stuff that might help you get to the next area but isn't required to get to the next area. And that's kind of cool, the way that they have everything laid out like that. They do trip over their own feet at some points, because they're like giving you, like, hey, here's a platforming challenge where you have to leap over this thing and double jump and wall run and then dash. And they give you like all these cool things to do where you're feeling like really like a ninja and really acrobatic and stuff. And they just place enemies that are going to shoot projectiles at you with like 100% accuracy. Like, stop interrupting the fun part by making me stop and kill this thing and then start over so that I can actually do the fun part with him out of the way. And there are a lot of enemies that just float in the air and shoot things at you. A lot of projectiles that you have to avoid. And you have a block. But it really disrupts the flow of doing all that acrobatic platforming. And I think that they really did themselves a disservice by saying, here's the fun thing you got to do, but you have to make sure that you have to methodically clear these things out before you start experimenting with the platforming. There's also some bad spawning. There was the boss that I was talking about before, where I saved just in case it crashed right after I beat him, and then it did. There was a fight that I was going through, and I very nearly rage quit the game after this, but I ended up like going doing some side stuff and having some fun with him before I went back and beat him. Where you're fighting him, there's a pool of lava. He shot me, knocked me into the lava, which of course would cause you to respawn, to take some health damage, respawn on the platform. I kept respawning in the lava.
That's bad.
And it respawned me over and over in the lava until I game overed.
Generally, lava is not a good thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So
wow, that's fucked up.
At that point, I was like, and I had basically like 14 Zelda hearts for your HP. And I had to go through, and landing in the lava takes away too. So I had to watch it cycle through 7 times, just kind of stared at the screen like, okay, I'm just going to keep on respawning in lava. Fuck you, game. You fucking suck. But rather than like bashing my head against that boss, I just went and I started collecting some things and having some fun with the game, like collecting like in Hollow Knight, your badges. It's pretty much lifted that out of Hollow Knight, where you get these different badges that you can equip and you can expand the number that you can equip, that change how you move and how you attack. And I think like that's where the game shines, is just kind of turning you loose and giving you these different areas to explore and kind of expand out as you gain more skills and more proficiency with your skills. There's also like the Zelda comparisons. There's like these mini temples kind of thing where, you know, you enter an area and there's keys and locked doors and you have to beat up enemies to unlock the door and things like that. And they're not super inspired. They're also not overly ambitious, which I think is a good thing. Because I think this game has enough technical issues to where if they tried to make these really ornate dungeons, they would have ended up fucking that up too. But the dungeons they have in there are just kind of medium-grade Zelda style. They're not anything to write home about, but there's nothing really wrong with them either. There is an interesting dungeon that has an interesting idea that I don't know if they did intentionally, but you know, in a Zelda dungeon, any given Zelda dungeon, there's an entry point and then you're just in there until you're done and you exit out the same way. The dungeon, the steam house in Blue Fire, it has like 3 entry points and you leave and come back, and like one of the exit points actually puts you into a town, and you can go into the town and do some upgrade and then go right back in. And I think it's a really interesting idea for a dungeon. It's something that Zelda's never really done, unless you count as like leaping off the edge of a divine beast, or like maybe the spirit temple in Ocarina of Time to an extent. But you never really get like these dungeons that are part, like a more connected part of the world in a Zelda game, the way that this one was. And again, I don't think they did this intentionally. I have a hard time believing that anything was intentionally super well designed in this game. But it's a really interesting idea to have, like, here's your area where your main objective is, and you can take these branches off of it at different points, do some other stuff, and then jump right back in where you left off. But I really think that they just ran short on time and money in this game, which is a shame, because I really want to like this. And maybe when, you know, they get the technical issues ironed out, maybe when this game is ready for release, it'll actually be worth a play. Right now, it's hard to recommend.
Like Bloodstained?
Like Bloodstained, yeah. A year later, it'll be ready to play.
That's a shame, because this game actually looked pretty cool from the trailer. Looked like it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I see here, yeah, nobody gives it more than an 8 out of 10 on any console.
I think that's real generous.
By the way, they sure uploaded this thing to a lot of different consoles. It's on PS4, it's on Xbox,
it could be PC. A Bloodstained situation as well. It's just this wonky and shit on Switch. And
yeah. Could be.
But I mean, that's a lot of the, at least quick skimming of a, you're not the only one that's having issues with the bugs in this game. It sounds like, yeah, this thing wasn't, taken out of the oven a little too soon.
Which, again, like to your point about Bloodstained, it was not as janky a mess on other consoles, and that's just, like, know where your audience is. Mm-hmm. Like, of course Bloodstained is going to sell best on Switch. Of course it is. It's a shame on you for not knowing that.
Well, this model of game team that they seem to have made, where it seems like it's a combination of, like, you know, Zelda and Dark Souls and all this stuff, like, it's kind of fitting for the Switch. This is, like, what's popular on the Switch, what people like.
Yep. So yeah,
swords though, you get swords on your back, two big swords.
You get some swords. That's how you're doing your weapon upgrading. Swords are going to affect the damage that you're outputting.
You just carry more swords.
Yeah,
you just carry bazooka. Yeah. A one use bazooka.
Who needs courage when you have a gun?
Yes.
So yeah, Little Nightmares 2. That's a new game that came out on the 11th.
I got that one as well.
Yeah. Did you finish it?
Sure did.
Oh, perfect.
Didn't take long, man. That was a quick game.
It is a brisk game. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Okay. I'm actually kind of hesitant to even recommend it.
Okay.
I hate to say.
Okay.
What would I say they do?
I was going to tear this apart like Xenoblade.
Yeah. So, for starters, Sharla, you barely get to use her at all in Little Nightmares 2. Let's start with that.
Sharla's basically a non-presence in Little Nightmares 2.
I know. Like, what the fuck? Who do they think they are?
Who's Sharla?
All right. So, A-plus for mood and environment. You could tell that they put a lot of effort.
Oh, I guess it's a joke. I'm tired.
It came back around. But yeah, I think they really nail the art direction and just like setting up these creepy atmospheres. And of course, some of the things are kind of tropey, you know, like have your creepy puppet dolls and things like that. But just like the way everything kind of looks like it's squishy and slimy throughout the game. They definitely really nailed the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. Also works great as a horror game. You know, the Switch really doesn't have a lot of horror games. I don't know if you noticed this. You can't even search by genre in the eShop for horror.
Hmm.
The game, the console, I guess, Switch wants to be family friendly, so they're not going to be like, you know, here's all of this stuff for all of your zombies and blood and guts and stuff. But the console itself is definitely lacking in horror, and this is a horror game and a pretty good one at that. Even though I think this game is painfully short, there's just so little content in this game, as great as it looks. This is absolutely a game I will play come Halloween time, and I want to get a little spooky. I mean, absolutely, I'll be revisiting this game for sure.
I think...
You gotta get Little Nightmares 1, though.
I've already played Little Nightmares 1.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think that, to your point about it being short, I think they probably were aware, which is why you have like those collectibles, like your hats... And like those little glitches that you can find,
you probably dusty versions of you. Mm-hmm. That you have to find.
Yeah, you probably won't find them on your first playthrough. And one of them, explicitly, one of the hats is only available in DLC. I couldn't find like if there's a way to update the game to get DLC, or if it's like content that has to be purchased later. Nope. I don't know, but I was like looking up hat locations after I finished the game. And one of them is, like, no, you have to, like, have this extra area that's DLC that you go up into.
Hmm. I think I might know where you're talking about, too. Is it one where it's, like, you have to go hide underneath a bed in one area when the tall guy comes after you, and then you got to sneak back to the... There's, like, a hidden room?
Maybe.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe.
Oh, and by the way, like...
No, I don't think it was in the sequence with the tall man.
Okay. Well, by the way, the first Little Nightmares, like you're talking about, is currently also on a heavy, heavy sale right now.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty cheap.
If anybody wants it, they should totally do that.
How much do you know offhand?
It's like $7.
God, that's a hell of a deal.
Yeah.
I love that game.
Yeah, so, again, on top of being very short, it's too easy. This game is way too easy. The puzzles are too simple, and there aren't enough of them. I think there's a couple of memorable moments in it, but ultimately, everything is way too quick to solve. They actually kind of repeat a lot of scenarios. I feel like I've hit 6 or 7 times is that sequence where you're just getting chased. You're just getting chased down a thing and you just got to run. And, you know, thankfully, I think her name is Six. The girl's there. Just follow her and you'll be fine. I mean, the first couple times it gets you. It's like, ooh, that's, but then you realize the whole setup of it and way too generous with checkpoints. I feel like I walk forward and there's a checkpoint.
I'll jump in here real quick.
Yeah.
To your point about it being easy, I think that it's a weird balance that they have to strike. I agree with you. None of the puzzles, like, you don't really get any head scratchers.
Yeah.
When you're going through the game, there aren't going to be very many times where you're not quite sure where the solution is. And I think the first one does a better job of having, like, these more complex setups. Where, like, you have to, like, initiate this sort of Rube Goldberg machine to get things to execute the way you want them to. Whereas a lot of Little Nightmares 2 is escape, run from the thing. And I think, like, it's not difficult, but it doesn't have a lot of room for error. If you mess up,
yes,
you're going to get caught and you're going to get sent back to your checkpoint. And I think that actually undercuts the tension of what's happening there. One of the really fun things in Little Nightmares 1 was that there really weren't that many of those chase sequences, and when there was more of a margin for error, so you don't get taken out of your panic moment. You're like, oh fuck, I messed up, can I still make it? And you do end up still making it. Whereas in Little Nightmares 2, you fuck up, you die, and then you get sent back, and then the more it happens, the more it undercuts. Like, you're just thinking, okay, well, I just have to perfect this.
This is a Celeste moment. You're like, oh, who cares? Let's just go again. Like,
it's... Right, right. And you
but Celeste is, like, refined.
Platforming.
Sharp as a knife kind of game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas this little is really clunky too.
When you're running around. We're trying to drag around a hammer, and then you can't even really safely rely on this... For one, the audio cue means you've waited too long. You know, Jerry, that's one of the things you wait for, is like the sound. You hear the sound, you hit the button. When you hear the sound, it means you waited too long, so you're dead.
I have something to say about those games of chicken that you have to play. Yeah. But just to kind of wrap up on the chase sequences, I think it really undercuts the tension when you have to repeat it over and over again. There should have been more.
You do that once or twice. Not six times. Yeah, I feel like it just right. How many times they made you do that?
It was
ridiculous.
Right. And I think like the best one was in the fourth chapter when you're running from the tall man. I think that was probably the best chase sequence.
Yeah.
But like the ones in from like the doctor in chapter 3, that was one where it's just very easy to die. There's none of that margin for error. But that was also both in chapter 2 and 3 with the dolls and like the mannequin hands in chapter 3.
Yes.
So many sequences where you're just like, okay, you're in a room, here's your hammer, here's your axe, wait for them to come get you and swing it at the right time.
Yeah.
And where and again, not much margin for error, and it is just not fun to have to over and over again wait there and swing the thing. And if you hear them scream at you, you know you're too late. But you got to go through it all again anyway.
Yeah, and again, it's not to say that it's bad that they did this. I think there's just probably a way they could have done it where, you know, you didn't have to kill six of them in a row or something, or you didn't have to like smash the hands. But again, you're not doing it for too long that it really can be like, oh, I hated that part, because it still only took like what I had to do it 5-10 minutes.
Yeah,
to get through that sequence, and yeah, I died a bunch, but like. You know, you die and you respawn right there. So it wasn't like there was much risk or...
And again...
Truly frustrating shit there.
It undercuts the tension because there are parts where... Like when you had to like go through and like shine the flashlight at the right mannequins.
Yes.
I ended up doing that part over and over again because they ambush you. And when they ambush you, you don't really have much time to shine the flashlight over. So it just became like rinse and repeat over and over again until you memorize where they're going to pop up at you. Yeah. And when you're memorizing it, it just becomes mechanical rather than this tense moment like, oh my God, where are they going to come out next?
Yeah. And still, as I say this, even though a lot of these polls are not great, keep in mind, that's incredible environment. And that's a great mood they establish. The way that you use the flashlight in the room, the way that it illuminates the room... is so cool. It does give you that sense of dread of what's in the dark, what can't be seen.
I think it would just been so much more impactful if you were able to make it through in one or two tries. It would have been like, oh God, remember that room where like the mannequins were coming at us and we had to shine the flashlight, rather than like, yeah, we're gonna remember this room because we had to do it 8 times.
Yeah, it's so much better as a stealthy cat and mouse kind of game than it is with a combat game or a chasing game.
And I think they lost the plot a little bit when it comes to like what made for a good sequences or good levels, because in the first one we were mentioning it gets much more complex with the things it's asking you to do rather than presenting you with like the next monster that's going to pop out at you.
So this is a weird thing to bring up, but for me there was definitely an area where the game just kind of got wonky, got really weird. It was the part where you're with the doctor. The most time I spent on any one puzzle was because the game was broken at that point. I don't know if you remember, there's this one puzzle that you have to solve, but it involves basically cadavers in the walls, then they have to pull the trays out.
Okay.
There's a part where I'm supposed to do something with my companion that gets me through that. And the companion never did the thing that they were supposed to do. They got in a locked state. But the entire time I'm there, I'm like, something I'm not doing right. There's an object I'm not interacting with correctly here. And I walked all over, I'm not kidding, I probably spent 15, 20 minutes in this one room thinking, I haven't had to resort to a video on how to beat this game yet. I hate for this to be the thing. And I look it up and I realize I just needed to restart the checkpoint so the character would interact correctly.
Oh, that's weird. So I never ran into a technical issue like that where Six wasn't doing the thing she needed to do.
Yeah.
What a bitch.
I had a couple of times.
Oh, she is. No question about that.
Yeah. Optics can be a little janky, and sometimes it's for fun. Like, I remember I smashed the skull of one of those, clay doll guys, and a part of his skull popped into the fourth wall, like kind of that wall that you view everything in.
Oh, yeah.
And it started glitching up. It was just like started spasming up the thing, and I kind of even positioned myself so that I could be like right on top of it as I watched it go up. That was kind of funny. One time a key got locked under the lock. I mean, got stuck under the lock, and I couldn't pick up the lock, so I had to restart.
Oh, shit.
Again, that's a minor thing. I didn't lose any time of gameplay. The game, because again, it's restart the checkpoint is just immediately there for these scenarios to happen. There was an elevator sequence where you have to juggle how you're using the elevator and how the locks are arranged.
Mm-hmm.
I failed it the first time, so I knew exactly what I needed the second time, only to find that Six, instead of staying in the elevator, not only did she not stay in the elevator, she didn't follow me, but by the time I got up to the top, she was outside of the elevator and not even taking commands. I couldn't even grab her by the arm and move her. Like, I had everything I needed to do to move forward with the puzzle. I just couldn't get her to interact with the environment, so I was stuck, and I had to restart it again.
Well, that's bizarre.
And you know what? That's a bummer. This is weird, and it all happened literally in the span of maybe 45 minutes of gameplay for me. The game ran really smooth before that, smooth enough afterwards, but right in the middle, I just had a bunch of weird things happen. I don't know what was going on there. The doctor's level sure fucked me up.
Mm.
But again, other than that, like, it's fine. I just don't think I really ever had that, like, wow or, like, aha moment. What a genius game mechanic you've established here or, like, any of that. I think there's some great part. Like, I really like the part where you're in the anatomy room where the woman's at the desk, like, working on the body parts and stuff. And that is the cat and mousiest part of the whole game. And I loved that shit. That was perfect. I would have done that 6 to 8 times versus doing the whole, you know, chasing sequences.
The section where you like have to figure out like what parts of the desk you're climbing and what you're hiding behind as she's like turning around, and that was a really great part.
I didn't do it myself too. After I beat the game, of course, I went on and looked a bunch of stuff online about it. You can grab the thing off of her desk that she's working on too.
I tried that one time. I tried, like, well, she keeps catching me. What if I grab this and throw it somewhere else? It's going to be like Goose Game where she's going to, like, chase that thing first and give me time to get away. No, that didn't work.
Yeah.
But, like, the school, like, I think that it would have been a really great stage if you didn't have to spend so much time smashing little puppet dudes with, like, the hammers and stuff. If they cut back down on that a little bit, I think it'd been really, really great. And then, like, they cap it with, like, the head chasing you through the vents, like, oh shit,
that's pretty
funny. My god,
yeah,
that was a great moment.
Oh, and I like when you're in the room with all the little clay kids kind of just fucking everything up. They're just such little animals.
Like put the hat on,
that part
was fun.
I think we did a pretty good job not spoiling anything, so when it comes to the ending, I think we should not spoil anything there either.
So what happens?
It's anticlimactic to an extent.
I have a vague idea what happens to Law and Irons. One, you told me.
Well, I think it does tie into, I guess, like the whole narrative. I think that there is a bit of a time loop sort of thing happening, some sort of self-fulfilling prophecies that are going on in the game.
I think there is an interesting read on this. And again, I don't think it really spoils anything to say this, because this is, one, wrong. I'm sure I'm wrong. But I think it would be cool if this was the case, that... everyone keeps trying to pair these like they're supposed to be like boyfriend and girlfriend, since you're the guy. And given what you see of the two of them at certain points when they're not in their childlike forms, it's almost like a father and daughter relationship.
I didn't know that.
That's how I, when I was wondering, like, how could these two even like be in the same scenario together? And like you're saying, there's definitely messing with there's some kind of time loop or some weird thing happening with time. So I thought that would be a really cool thing for that to happen. To that point, literally 4 days ago, the creators of this game announced that they will be moving on to new projects and will not be working on a third one. So this has now a property owned by THQ Nordic, which is a mega conglomerate of a bunch of other things. So it's sort of now their intellectual property to do with what they will, and if it's anything like most everything else they own, it's probably not, they're not going to do anything with it. They own the property rights to hundreds and hundreds of games that they just never use. It's just sort of in their warehouse.
A lot of things that they handle. I probably shouldn't say a lot. Some things that they handle just end up getting re-released over and over again. Things like Darksiders or Da Blob. Da Blob was a Wii game that then they re-released on other platforms. I think last-gen platforms. And then Kingdoms of Alamur, which was that game that Kurt Schilling made a couple years back. It's like an MMO. And
the Red Sox pitcher?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That game is getting a re-release on Switch next month.
I got a coworker who's really excited about it.
So, THQ Nordic, they buy up these things and they'll re-release them every once in a while, but it doesn't seem like they ever do anything new to sort of continue any particular franchise or property.
So, yeah, it's Embracer Studios. These are not just titles. These are other studios. They own all of these studios. They own all of these other games.
Yeah.
So, I think that's kind of the saddest part about this whole thing is that, one, it does kind of leave you a little bit with bated breath. You kind of wonder what the next thing's going to be. It's sort of like if they ended Star Wars after two movies. You'd be like, that was a fucking fucked up scenario. What the hell?
Well goddamn.
Well, how are we going to resolve this?
This is a downer. No, I mean, I think, like, to an extent, like, we're not going to get into any sort of spoilers about the narrative, but I think, like, if you're approaching it from that perspective, I think there's enough, like, if you view it as a time loop, there's enough of a narrative to draw on from the two games combined to be closure.
Yeah.
And I think, like, from the way that they designed the levels and the puzzles, like, they kind of hit the high note to Little Nightmares 1. Little Nightmares 2 is a step down. Still a really fun game. I had a good time with it. But it seems like maybe they've run out of ideas, and maybe it's not so much that they're kind of done with the universe. Maybe they just don't know what to do next. So like, okay, well, let's just try to make different types of games. Yeah. Which, I mean, good. It's good that they have this. If this is the case, that they have this sort of integrity to say, okay, we've done everything we can do with this. Let's not milk it. Let's try to do something new.
Ah, there's more they could have done.
Well, sure.
Nightmares cooking game. There's
a dating sim, match three puzzle. Yeah,
yeah. Racing. Come on, they could have done a lot of stuff with this.
I agree. There's stuff that they could. I think there is stuff that they could have done. I just don't know if they think they could have done more. You know.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
It's a weird distinction, but yeah, I mean, games like this, like Limbo, Inside, Eco. There's mechanics you can come up with to make these things interesting.
It's easy to make games. I mean, they shouldn't have given up so easily.
It takes a few weeks. Yeah, Little Nightmares 3 could have been out in August.
Yeah, we could have knocked this out ourselves.
Uh-huh. Look at how many Five Nights at Freddy's games they made. All of them are golden, right? I'm sure. I haven't played them, but... So, yeah. I don't know. And I guess I hate to be the one that focuses in on this. $30. $40, excuse me. $40 for this game. Man...
It's, yeah.
I'm gonna pass.
There's just so little game here. I think, like, generously, you could say about 5 hours, which, you know, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't miss the $40 personally. I'm not like, God, that $40 would have gotten me out of a jam. I wouldn't begrudge anyone to say, like, it's 5 hours long and it's $40. Like, I mean, yeah.
I would feel totally okay telling someone to take that same $40 and, like, go buy Inside, which is just as spooky and scary as
and Limbo puzzles, and Little Nightmares 1.
An amazing story. And go buy Superliminal, which has amazing puzzles and a very cathartic ending. And then you got $10, so like I don't know, go buy like a burrito bowl or something. if this is very much your niche thing. One, if you want a horror game, this is a very good horror game. I feel like there are reasons to get this game, but gosh, like, I don't know. This feels more like you're put it on the wish list.
I would maybe
when Halloween rolls around, buy it.
I would agree. I would say, like, if you're shocked by the price tag, go get Little Nightmares 1 first. Like, if you haven't played that one, play that one first. It's going to give you a pretty good idea of what this game is going to be all about. And then if you play Little Nightmares 1 and you're still kind of shocked by the sticker, wait for a sale.
Yeah.
Because I think this one's definitely worth a play. But, again, I wouldn't... begrudge anyone saying like $40 seems a bit steep. Super Mario 3D World came out.
Nice.
Back in the next day, on the 12th. So I played through that one. I was playing co-op with the kids for a while, and then they were holding me back. So they have their... Ripley's actually playing early. She's got her own save file. She's doing pretty well. It helps that when you die enough, they give you that invincibility costume. And she's been... I think she's about halfway through the game, and she's been using that a little bit. But she's been doing really well, just like... holding the... She was playing at the dentist. She had a few dentist trips the past couple of weeks. And she would just, like, hold the Switch above her when they're, like, working in her mouth. Nice. And she does pretty well, like, just kind of, like, sitting on the couch with or on the bed with the Switch. So I'm thinking about getting her a Switch Lite maybe for her birthday this year.
Which color?
I'll let her pick the color. She'll probably pick pink, but I'll let her pick that. Mika's played a little bit, but Mika doesn't get as into it as Ripley does. But Bowser's Fury, I think, is the main highlight. I talked a bunch about 3D World back when that came out on Wii U, so I don't really have too much to add at this point. Bowser's Fury is the new content, and if you are unfamiliar with what Bowser's Fury is, think of a Super Mario Odyssey level where you have a bunch of different objectives that are scattered around. You can collect all of your... They call them cat shines. There's little cat icons.
God damn it.
And you do a bunch of different things in order to get them. It involves just primarily platforming stuff, but like beat the clock, like little races, collect your five little tchotchkes and one will appear. Just get to a certain point, like reach the flagpole kind of goals. Also things like move vertically or race this other character. Yep. Typical Mario stuff.
Get 10 no-scope headshots.
Yeah. You have to use the Super Nintendo Super Scope to get that. It's an additional cost.
Yeah.
There's 100 of these things scattered around. You can get to the credits by collecting 50 of them. But what'll happen is you have this large world. And, you know, in Super Mario Odyssey, it is very, very thematically consistent throughout the entire thing. Whereas in... Mario 3D World Bowser's Fury, it's much more segmented. Like, here is this course, and you're going to get five cat shines here. And then there's another course, and you're going to get five over there. It kind of splinters off a little bit more. And the more that you get, the more things you're going to unlock. There's a sort of, like, corruption in the water that prevents you from traveling to different things. And every X number of things that you collect, Bowser's going to appear, and you will beat him in his furious form, and that will unlock more stuff. Now, he'll also appear, you know, when on a timer, and you'll get some warnings about when he's going to appear, and there are certain things that you can use him for to actually unlock things, like destroy these blocks or anyway that only Bowser can destroy, and that will get you access to a new thing or just a new cat shine. And you pretty much only fight him when the game kind of prompts you to, because every time you become Giga Mario and get your giant lion costume,
awesome.
You beat him up, and then it gets locked away until you get more cat shines. So he'll appear again, but you can't fight him again like that until you've progressed far enough in the game. And yeah, I had a pretty good time with this. I really liked it. I kind of wish that they would sell this as its own, like, standalone thing for, like, here's $20 and you can play Bowser's Fury, which means if they were to do this, it would probably say $40 and you can play Bowser's Fury. But the way that they give you all of these different platforming challenges, and I should mention, like, I've made the Mario Odyssey comparison a couple of times, but it does play like Mario 3D World. Mario Odyssey... the camera kind of tracks behind you most of the time. In Bowser's Fury, you have to do a lot of adjusting with the camera. The way that Mario moves, he doesn't have the same repertoire of jumps that he would have in Odyssey. You don't have your triple jump. You don't have, like, your backflip that's so quick to command. So, you know, he controls generally better in Odyssey. It's just, more fun and, I guess, snappy to pull off more complex jumps in Odyssey.
But you said, is it one big world.
Right.
So you can just kind of wander around, and they don't really do a lot to kind of keep you in your lane.
No, the only thing they do to gate you is those Bowser fights. So, you know, like the areas that are corrupted off, like they're gated off until you beat Bowser. But once you've, you know, I think once you've fought him like three times, so basically once you've collected like 30 or 40 of the, I think 30, if I remember correctly, you pretty much have access to everything throughout the map. Okay. So, yeah, 30 out of 100, once you get like 30% of your total objectives, then you can just kind of go where you want. Your cat power-up, of course, and Fire Flower. You also have your raccoon suit and your boomerang power-up. Bowser's secret weakness, as we all know, the boomerang.
Yeah. You get the rhino and the swordfish, too.
Ah, that would be amazing.
That would be hilarious if there was just, like, if they did have the four Kong pieces in there. The first time you saw a cave, you'd just be like, oh, fuck this game.
that'd be really fun.
Find the one Kong in this whole fucking game.
And you know, there's challenges in basically each segment of the map where you have to find five little pieces to make your one big piece. They could do that with Kong letters. That would be really funny. Or they could just be Mario letters because there's
just
five.
Just one, you know? Like, you don't have to do it a bunch, but I think just for the...
Yeah, like have like a Donkey Kong themed section and like got a collector Kong letters there and your bananas instead of coins.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool. Missed opportunity.
Oh.
But yeah, I really dug it. I thought this was a really cool addition that they did here. So a couple other new releases to burn through here real quick. Capcom Arcade's Classic came out on the 17th.
Nice.
I played a little bit of it. We talked about it a couple of shows ago. The 1943 is the free one you get there. You also get... You're saying there was another game you can download,
yeah, I think, right? It's Ghosts and Goblins, mm-hmm, is the other one. Okay. That you get for free just from loading it up. I saw it when I was purchasing it in the eShop because I had to search for Capcom. It didn't come up cleanly. And then I saw the whole list of packages, and one of them was there for free. So I was like, all right, I'll grab that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game is brutally difficult. Man, it's hard.
Do they do the rewind?
Yes. Yeah, okay. There was that rewind feature, but like, best of luck, man.
Yeah, I mean, still,
I don't know if that's going to make this anymore.
Even with a rewind, like in that game, your jump mechanic, you don't really control your momentum. Once you jump, there's an arc to that jump, and you are committed.
And all of the monsters respawn all of the time,
mm-hmm,
and it feels like there's twice as many monsters that should be on the screen at any one time.
Shit,
it is tough. It's a very, very tough game. Yeah, but it's still fun, and of course, that is like that fucking theme song. It's just delightful, you know? I can listen to that song all day. It's a really good tune. But you were saying 1943. You played a little 1943? A
little bit.
Me too. I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah.
I can see the appeal. You know, very much like a, you know, your... What was the terminology for that kind of game? Where you're just like
on
like
a ship. Shoot 'em up?
Yeah, I mean, but it's like, yeah, but you're like in the plane and you're going over the thing.
Top-down shooter.
Collecting the item. Yeah, top-down shooter. Thank you. So, collecting all of the upgrades to make guns better. And they give you a health bar. It's not like it's a one-hit death, which
right?
Is kind of nice,
right? And you can refill the health bar,
yeah,
which is something that not a lot of those top-down shooters do.
Yeah, I guess as you do, you got someone in there in the back with like a soldering iron and some sheet metal, just keeping the plane together. You know,
that duct tape and hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Persona 5 Strikers, that one's out on the 23rd. Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection came out today at time of recording.
Yeah,
which, speaking of time of recording, Little Nightmares is only good for 4 more hours on the sale.
Oh,
so
no.
Whoever's listening missed out on it.
We've teased everybody.
Oh, just find yourself in a time loop, just like Little Nightmares 2, and then go back a couple of days and buy the game. That's all you do. Simple as that.
So, what's the standard price? Did you notice, Wes?
I think it's $29. Okay. It's down to $7.49.
I think that's a better prospect. If you feel bad about missing the sale. But if it went on sale once, it will go on sale again.
Yeah, just working your wish list and just hope.
These guys got brass balls assuming that their games are worth the prices they're charging.
This 3-hour game is worth $40. Fuck them.
Oh, man.
Little Nightmares 1 was a little longer.
Yeah. 5 hours.
Ooh. But still, if it went on sale once, it'll go on sale again. So I don't think there's any reason to assume that you have to be locked in for $30 there.
You're charging me $40 for a game. I don't care what the format of the game is. I get a double jump. I should have a double jump. I'm just saying that's a thing that needs to happen.
I could go see a movie for $6.
What if it's
not anymore?
Yeah,
I can go see a movie for like $12, and that's like
don't go into a theater right now. That's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, another selling point on Paradise Killer.
COVID's a myth.
Have you ever played a detective game with a double jump?
I have not.
Get Paradise Killer and you will. Yeah, of course. It's a theater platform.
Last new release, Bravely Default 2. That one is not out of time recording here. It is coming out tomorrow, so we'll have some thoughts on that on another show.
We will have some thoughts, or you will have some thoughts?
I will have some thoughts. I'm going to subject you guys to this.
I am interested in playing it when you're done.
Okay.
Because it does look fun.
I really like these games. Wes, we've been talking for a while here. You got a game? Tag in.
What game have you been playing, Wes?
I've been playing Breath of the Wild again, so
nice.
It's not like I'm playing a new game or anything.
That game will never get old.
That's a fun game.
It's such a joy. Now that I know where shit is and I have a grasp of how the game works and everything, I'm like, man, I could just...
Yeah, it's better the more you play it.
What do I want to do first? I did stumble across a couple of things. I didn't realize the Bashkala shrine that we always joke and reference.
Best shrine name.
Has the climber's helmet, the climber's bandana.
I forgot about that, too.
It has that in there. I was like, oh, shit. This is the best shrine.
Get your sweet bandana from the Bashkala shrine.
Yeah. Those things are great. I've just been going around collecting DLC armor and just exploring stuff. I don't know exactly where I'm going to go for my first main thing.
Going to beeline to Tarrytown?
I'm right now heading that way. Oh, it's Tarrytown. I've been calling it something else.
I think you've been saying Tingle.
Tinkle.
Which Akala...
Tinker. I was calling it Tinkertown.
Which Akala is objectively the best region. Because it's
place is so good.
I fucking love Akala, even though it rains every afternoon.
It's super annoying.
But it's got that coastline where all those Tingle Islands are. You got Tarrytown, you got the Ancient Lab, the sort of a monolith colossus structure where like that ancient battlefield is.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's a great little region. And the main reason why I'm going that way first is since I have the DLC, in the top right of the map, there's this one of those little maze areas.
Yep. One of those labyrinths.
And in the bottom of there, when you finally get down there and get your reward, there's an extra chest for the DLC stuff, and it's the teleport pad. And you can drop that wherever you want and then warp there whenever you want. Like, it's so handy.
That's pretty sweet.
So that's why I'm beelining it that way. That and just picking up a couple little things in that area that are so great.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's such a good game. It's a lot of fun just going around and be like, what the fuck is that over there? I didn't see that last time. Like,
What a great game.
So good. It's so good.
So just to wrap up here, let's go rapid fire with some games that are coming out next month. We'll get in deeper. Actually, most of these probably won't get in any deeper. This is probably the last we're going to talk about these games. Harvest Moon One World. That's coming out on the 2nd.
I have it on pre-order.
Oh, do you?
No.
Good, you shouldn't. If you want to... If you want a farming simulation game, you should wait for Story of Seasons. That's coming on the 23rd.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Actually. Apex Legends, that's out on the 9th.
Finally.
Yeah.
About time, I guess. Who knows?
Did you guys see that BioWare was stopping support for Anthem? Were you as shocked as I was?
I'm surprised
about
they lasted this long.
That was the thing that was most surprising to me, too. Like, oh, shit, they were still supporting Anthem.
They were still doing this? I bought that game for under $10.
Oh, good.
And it was just because it was under $10. I was like, oh, fuck it. I'll try this out.
Did you ever play it?
It was fun for 2 hours.
And then?
Tedious.
It stopped being fun?
Yeah, it was like, all right, I'm flying around. Like, I don't fucking... I don't care.
Crash Bandicoot 4. It's About Time. It's getting a Switch port on the 12th.
Yeah, It's About Time. It's getting a Switch port.
Yeah, that was a weird one. What, did it come out on other systems last year?
Yeah, it's been out for a while. It's been out for a minute.
Yeah, kind of strange that it took so long to get a Switch version of that.
Plants. You want to relive the environment that Danny Boyle was going for in the film The Beach?
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Perfect. Plants vs. Zombies Battle for Naperville. That's on the 19th.
This is bizarre. This game has been out for years.
I think that EA is trying their damnedest to get in on the Switch market without putting much effort into it. Because there it is.
Yeah.
Once again, EA, you're just ruining everything.
I mean, it looks fun. Looks fine. I'll plan on getting it, but, you know.
I think that's probably, like, the case for a lot of these games here. Like, Apex Legends looks fine. I'm not going to play it. Crash Bandicoot 4 looks fine.
That's just to say, like, I wouldn't nuke it from orbit, but I'm not going to, like...
Right.
I don't want anything to do with it, but, you know.
But I also don't want to, like, I'm Crash Bandicoot agnostic. Yeah. It's probably fine, but I'm not going to stand in line for it.
Right.
Tales from the Borderland, that's on the 23rd.
Who cares?
Yeah?
Yeah, not too excited about that.
Monster Hunter Rise.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
I'm in, Wes. Are you in? I got my pre-order.
I don't have a pre-order, but I'm in.
Yes.
It'll show up with my store, and I'll grab it on a release date, and you and I can play.
Ryan, any interest in Monster Hunter?
Not especially.
Okay.
No, it's cool. I'm happy that you're happy.
I'm pretty pumped. I got some other friends at work. I got, well, I have a other friend at work that we can join up and get a party going.
We've discussed this. We're not allowed to have other friends.
No, fuck Hector. You know Sam. You like Sam. Sam's good people.
Have I met Sam?
Yeah, he came to a game night one time.
I'm so bad with names.
Back when we had game nights.
We need to have another game
night. We had friends. Like two, and then COVID happened.
Yeah. Everyone died.
We need game night.
We need less COVID.
Well, we're masks.
like ski masks, though, so we can still talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, Wes will wear his full body latex.
So. I mean, I have it on under these clothes, so I'm always prepared for my full body condom.
But yeah, I'm pumped for Monster Hunter. I think it's going to be really cool.
They're fun games. I really enjoyed the last one, Monster Hunter World.
Mm-hmm.
I put a lot of hours into that. I put a lot of hours into that. I still feel like I didn't get anywhere. It is, I gotta warn you, it is very grindy. If there's an armor set, you're like, I want this. You're going to have to do a lot of hunts over and over again in order to get the parts you need to eventually make it.
I think that'll be okay when we're playing multiplayer.
Yeah.
I think that could get tedious doing it. I haven't played a Monster Hunter since Monster Hunter Tri back on Wii.
Yeah.
And that was a game where, very typical of early Monster Hunter, where for the first several hours they were telling you, no, go gather mushrooms. No, go over and run this errand. You didn't actually get into killing monsters until several hours into it, and even then, you're killing small things.
Oh, that's irritating.
And like
children.
Right, you're killing small children, children.
The first mission here, you're chasing these little monsters for a minute, and then at the very end, it wasn't like a huge monster, but it still was like a fucking lion-sized monster coming at you.
Early,
and that was good.
Early Monster Hunter took you actually a while before you're actually fighting things. Like,
World didn't take that long.
Go learn how to camp. Go learn how to swim. Fuck off, game. This is called Monster Hunter. But, oh, and Wes, I meant to ask you, because I wanted to see if you wanted to try the demo for Balan Wonderland.
What's that?
It's a 3D platformer from the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog and Nights into Dreams.
This already sounds horrible.
Wonder World.
Ballad Wonder World?
Is it Wonder World or Wonderland?
It says initial release date 2021. That would be this year.
Ballad Wonder World?
Yeah, Ballad Wonder World. Oh, this game. This game looks... No, he's...
Right.
Is he trolling the shit out of me?
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Download the demo. Report back. No, by most accounts, the demo is terrible.
Yeah.
Which is why I wanted to have you play it.
It's sort of like someone described what Mario Odyssey was, and they're like, oh, Cappy, people like hats. We'll make a hat game.
Yeah, let's make a hat game that's technically incompetent and crashes all the time.
Hey, how do you spell this? Who is this?
Balan.
B-A-L-A-N.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I miss hearing you guys.
That's okay.
There's actually a game that came out in December of last year that just came out on Switch this month. Called Haven. I don't know if you've heard of it. I'm actually really excited to play this game.
This fucking game.
It's got a 98% fan rating.
Oh, nice. That's the one with the guy and the girl, and you're stranded on a planet, and yeah, you fuck.
Constantly.
And that's the game.
No, I don't know. The trailer really sold me. This looks like it's going to be fun. It's supposed to be some sort of survival game.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Cool.
This one seemed like it was kind of off the radar. I don't think I heard anybody talk about it until I was looking through... information about Little Nightmares 2.
Yeah, it's probably very easy to get lost in the shuffle in February. February was a really busy month, and March looks to be a pretty busy month in terms of releases for Switch, but I'm probably not going to be buying a game until Monster Hunter, unless, you know, for some reason they announced Sports Story coming out
the next couple weeks. Yeah, just a cold drop on that one. Like, here you go, back. By the way, enjoy.
That'd be really great. Are you downloading the demo, Wes?
I downloaded the fucking demo.
Yes!
It's a demo. Who cares? I'll waste 10 minutes of my life.
Looking forward to hearing that one in a couple weeks after we do the Pokemon show, which is the next show.
Yeah.
And there's a presentation tomorrow.
So I'm sure we'll have something to talk about, finally.
Yeah.
Well, it's just pulling content out of our ass.
God, why? It's supposed to be a 20-minute presentation. Watch, it's like 15 minutes on that MMO that they haven't released yet. You remember that one? What was it called? Pokemon...
They were gonna? I didn't know.
There was an MMO?
Yeah, it was last year they did a presentation and there was like a Pokemon MMO and you guys were like, this looks fun. And I was like, it looks like shit. And now I'm the only one who remembers it.
Jeez. I sent you a video of someone playing some VR version of it, which looked hilarious.
A VR version of Pokemon?
Yeah, like they had made it that way, but then like people were modding their Pokemon to not look at all what they should have looked like. And
huh.
I don't know.
Can you have them wearing hats? That'd be cool.
Yeah, one of them, like, was the trainer said, like, he's talking up his Charmander, because he has a little Charmander there in the fight, and he's like, all right, Charmander, we're going to fuck this chick up, and she's like, you're not going to fuck me, because, again, it's talking to another person, they can hear you, like, you're not going to fuck me up, go Togepi, and he's like, oh, Togepi, we got it, Charmander, and he looks up, and Togepi is, like, 8 feet tall.
Holy shit.
It's just, like, his muscly dude with a little Togepi, and she's like... He's like, what the hell is that? She's like, go Togepi, tear his balls off. He's like, that's not a move. I was just like, okay, this looks fantastic.
Nice.
Not officially licensed, though. Shocker.
I would imagine. All right. So next we're going to talk about some Pokemon.
Great.
We're going to talk about Togepi tearing Charmander's balls.
Oh my god. Hey, yeah. There's an 85% chance he has balls. So yeah, let's keep true. That in mind.
Yeah. So,
oh, Wes over here, cheating on us.
Oh, what happened?
What did I do? You have been untrue and unfaithful. He recorded a podcast.
What? No.
Oh, shit. You found that? You told me.
Oh, I did tell you about that.
I'm bringing it up on air.
How dare you?
Did you listen to it?
No, you didn't even tell me where it was.
Garbage. I don't know if you posted it even. It may not even be posted yet. Because that first one, it was just kind of sloppy. But we're already like...
Not as easy as it looks, is it?
I'm in a podcast with you, dipshit. I know how difficult it is.
We're but pros.
No, we Jeremy and I, John's brother, who... John's also cheating on us. Did you know that?
Really?
Oh, we do like a socialist podcast.
Yeah, he does.
It's really sporadic, though.
This is like your wet dream of a podcast. You want
probably is, yeah. Is this why you don't bring up politics anymore? You've got another outlet for this, huh? Is that what's up?
I'll invite you onto one.
You but should. You better.
It's tough
I'll to start
work.
My own. Mine's going to be a communist podcast. I'll fucking deal with that.
You know what? All podcasts belong to the state, comrade.
Yeah.
But yeah, we.
It's tough with Jeremy. He's 5 hours ahead of us and has children.
It's tough to schedule and.
And John has children, but he doesn't care about them. He ignores them. So
God,
I mean,
God no.
So
thankfully, they're old enough to where they can use their own knives.
I mean, Mika peed her bed, and you just had her clean it up. I mean,
well, yeah, she's 7 years old. If she pees the bed and she's wide awake, you clean it. I'm gonna totally throw her under the bus here. I told her use the potty and go to sleep. She doesn't wear pull-ups anymore. She's 7, and she's been fine for months. And tonight she comes wandering out of her bedroom and saying, "I accidentally peed the bed." Like, you didn't even go to sleep. Jeez. You were in the bed and you just decided to use as a toilet. No, take all the stuff off the bed, put it in the washer, and you can go clean it. Then you can go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, nothing worse than like waking up at 4 a.m. needing to pee.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
Just get it out of the way early.
Right, but in a toilet.
Now it's a water
bottle. Oh, of course. That's the... Yeah, now it all makes sense.
Okay, well, eventually, Jeremy and I are doing another attempt, the 8th attempt, for the original side-scroller podcast that we've always wanted to do, where we just discussed books.
The 8th attempt?
We've done this so many times. We have little segments like this on some of our shows. We snuck them in over the years.
How dare you?
This is like our actual attempt at a podcast. And the first one was very sloppy, in my opinion. I think it'll be... We're working on the formula. We're figuring it out. And I think this next one's going to be good. We're discussing the book off air a little bit. We have a folder in...
Stop promoting your own shit. Cut this out.
We're making notes about this. So the next book we're going
to
be doing.
Have I wronged you both? I don't get to talk about politics anymore with you, and we don't get to talk about books anymore. What the fuck? What have I done?
No, we can talk about politics.
We can talk about books.
You say that now, but we don't. Jeez, I just want to know I'm loved.
Tell us more about your stupid fucking podcast.
The next book we're going to be doing, which is hopefully it's going to have a little bit better of a formula, is going to be Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. So
I think you've talked about this one before.
I've talked about it on air, but we're going to be actually discussing it. So
instead of us like staring at you as you talk about it, is that
literature? Yeah, exactly. See, this is why I do this with Jeremy, because he contributes. You guys just stare at me and make fun of the books. Like, yeah, what do they do next, Wes?
Hey, you know, we don't want to step on your toes or care. So
you're probably like, I can't even say the name of the author. They're going to make fun of it.
Well, we are. Was it Brandon Sanderson?
Not yet. We haven't done one of those yet. Oh. It's coming like a train wreck. He's in book four, The Stormlight,
He's in book four?
Book four he wrote himself out. Into it.
No, he just came out with book four. It's going to be like a 7 or 10 book series.
But all he did was write, he wrote himself into it, but it's him dunking a basketball on Robert Jordan, another fantasy writer.
This makes me think of the old Spider-Man cartoon, where the last episode, Spider-Man goes to another one of the multiverse worlds, and he meets Stan Lee, who takes Stan Lee swinging through the city. I'm like, what's this shit? Like,
nice.
That's horrific.
You didn't see that?
No, I didn't.
You never saw that episode? The very last episode of the old Spider-Man cartoon.
But yeah, the 90s animated series.
Yeah, he meets Stan Lee and takes him swinging through the city.
Wow, of course he does. There was a...
Rest in peace, Stanley.
Yeah, there was a couple of cartoons. They must have been late 80s, early 90s. It was Fantastic Four and Iron Man. They used to have their own animated series as well.
I have the complete Iron Man animated series on DVD.
Holy shit.
It was one little collection. It was nothing. I bought it for Jacob.
Really tremendous theme song where he's like building a suit on an animal. He's got this glorious mullet. Anyway, but Stan Lee would introduce every episode by telling you what was going to happen in that episode. And yeah, he really loved superheroes, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta love what you do. That's what they say.
Hey,
right?
Without Stan Lee, you wouldn't have your nice X-Men.
I
suppose that's true.
More Chris Claremont, right? At this point.
Well, Stan Lee created the X-Men in the original five, and then passed the torch.
Yeah, but God created the heaven and the earth, but Jesus said it's right. So Chris Claremont is Jesus in this scenario.
Yeah, I think that.
Wow. All right. I hope he's listening to this podcast and he just did wonders for his ego.
Like, he just came up from that big line of coke and was just like, oh, I knew it.
Those guys are right about everything but Little Nightmares 2. That game is a masterpiece. I think we're done here.
I'm pretty sure we are.
That's the end. Till next time.
So long. Bye-bye.